Accession number 30635, Mr. Doug Bone, Reel 2. Now, we were talking about your childhood, well, getting into a young man, you know, in the village of Dummer. After the war, so how did life go on after the war? You'd just be still at school in Basingstoke, at Queen Mary's School. Did you have any big hobbies at all? You know, kids sometimes have big hobbies or interests that dominate their lives a bit. Anything that you were particularly interested in?
I was terribly interested in fireworks. I would have been described as a pyromaniac because I had access to an awful lot of chemicals from the Petroleum Warfare Department. And I can remember vividly on the day after V-Day going in an army lorry with one of the engineers to a engineering factory in Fulham and picking up loads of barrels of magnesium dust, which you can imagine was highly volatile, magnesium, and that is what they experimented with in the flamethrower. It's what they mixed with the petrol to make a jelly, and that's what caused all the carnage that the flamethrower did produce. Was
now, did you use this for your own purposes though?
I used this powder. I had access to this powder, and I made my own fireworks indoors on the kitchen table. The place should have been blown up years ago.
And they worked?
They worked.
So that was.
I had a big catapult outside on the fence, and I used to, with a parachute, used to make these fireworks with a little parachute on, light the fuse, and fire them.
And so that was one bit. Any other big interests, or was that it?
Well, unfortunately, as I said earlier, my mother died when I was 16 in 1946, which put a stop to a lot of our celebrations, obviously. My father then was a widower, and my brother was in the army, and he and I soldiered on our own in the pub.
I presume you had to help.
I had to help. Now, I left school then at 16, and I stayed. My ambition always was to join the army.
Now, why was that? You know, I mean, I'm not. But no. What you got a family history for a start, but what was it in particular that appealed to you?
My grandfather spent a vast majority of his military service in India. He died when he was 82. And my brother, obviously, was 5 years older than me. And on a Sunday morning, I can remember sitting on the foot of his bed. And towards the end of his life, he was bedridden. And he would recall stories and histories of the Raj and the military involvement in India, and it was a place that I always wanted to go, but Mountbatten gave it away first.
So your interest was the empire, and you know, to serve in the army overseas,
right,
in India or places like India.
Yeah.
And so what were you going to work as in the meantime? Because you know you left school at 16.
I stayed at home until.
You mean working in the pub? I mean,
working in the pub.
So you worked in the pub?
Yeah, my father and I, yes, he kept me, basically, for another 2 years. And as soon as I was 18, the first thing I did was join the army.
So just from 46 to
48.
48. Do you remember anything about the time working in the pub? What was it like working behind the bar then?
Well, life then became a lot slower because the Petroleum Warfare Development Establishment closed. Life got back to basically a country pub again.
So So much less money
coming in. That's right. Not that much less, because people then realised that, you know, there was life after work, and the agricultural wages had gone up. There was more people from the village going into Basingstoke to work, factories-wise. Thornycroft had built their lorries in Basingstoke.
So it was the whole of Dunmore was more prosperous.
Well, yes,
more
life,
money about
life changed. That's right. Yeah, it started to brighten up.
And so you were working in a pub, playing a couple of games of cricket. You mentioned.
Yep.
Anything else?
No, not really.
So tell me about joining the army. How did you were determined to do it? How did you go about joining?
I just got on a train in Basingstoke one day and went to Southampton in the recruiting office and joined.
Into the army recruitment?
In the army.
And which unit were you going to join? Or what happened when you got in there? You know, you get in there, there's normally a sergeant or something.
That's right. I was dead set on joining the 10th Hussars.
Now, why them, of all?
Because they were in... My brother was... I wanted to go to Germany. My brother was in Germany. He'd met a girl in Germany that he dumped, but I continued corresponding with. And I thought this is one of the easiest ways to get to Germany. And I joined the Royal Armoured Corps with the preference of going to the 10th Hussars. But in those days, you joined the Royal Armoured Corps.
Now, so you joined them, and what was the date you joined them, if you can remember? It might be difficult. Or was it just shortly after your birthday?
May? Yes, it was between May and... I know I went to Catterick to start my primary training in July 48.
So probably about June you were recruited.
That's right.
And when you were recruited, were there any sort of tests you had to do, or anything they asked you, or anything you had to, a medical you had to do?
We had to do a medical exam, and you had to do a educational exam.
Now, how tough was the medical?
Oh, not very tough at all those days. If you could breathe, you were all right.
So, not to, and what about the intelligence test? Any trouble? No, I mean, you passed your grammar school test, so I presume...
There was no trouble.
Now, so then you had to wait about a month. We're not quite sure how long. And then in July 48, you go to the... is that the Royal Army Armoured Corps Depot at Catterick?
No, it was one of the training regiments.
Ah, now which one was it?
The 1420th, King's Hussars. Men in Lines. Catterick.
You were in the right. And what happened? What do you remember of the journey up there? Was it your first big journey? I don't know.
It was the first big journey ever I'd made, yes.
What do you remember of it?
Well, I suppose I went from here to London, across London to King's Cross, and then you met loads of other boys in exactly the same situation. Be it National servicemen or regular soldiers. Some were obviously national servicemen that had been conscripted to go.
Now, so you went down, so then you go down together to...
I volunteered to become a regular soldier simply to go where I wanted to go, not being posted to the local infantry unit.
And what was your reception like when you got to Catterick? Because, you know, you'd arrived as a civilian, not done any military training before.
Well, apart from Army Cadet Force.
Ah, no, I should have picked that up before. Tell us, what training you had with the Army Cadet Force? Just summarise that for us.
At the school, this was at school. Basically, it was infantry training.
And how much had you done?
Well, I think I was in the cadet force from the word going to school, starting school at 11.
Did you have a uniform?
Yes.
What was it?
But his tunic, breeches and putties. Those days.
Any trouble with the putties?
No, really. You got them all right. They were all right.
And take us. So would you have a drill afternoon? You know, yes. Wednesday or something.
Wednesdays.
We never. It was Wednesdays.
It was Wednesdays.
And what would you do on a Wednesday afternoon? What take me through what training you got with them?
Well, you did camouflage drill.
What was that?
Well, you go out into the woods. At the back of the school was a big wood, and you'd go there and camouflage yourself. And then another time, you'd perhaps go to the range with a rifle range. And fire, live round.
And how did you take to shooting? Was that with a Lee Enfield with a .22 Lee bored out?
No,
Lee?
It wasn't. It wasn't a
303. That's the
not to start with. I think we finished up with 303, but I forget what it was. A very old rifle that we had to start with.
Oh, would it be a Ross rifle, the Canadian one?
A Ross was even heavier than a Lee Enfield, wasn't it?
Supposed to have been.
Yeah, it was. As I said earlier about my brother bringing home a rifle when he joined the Home Guard, and that was a Ross.
And how were you a good shot naturally, or did they make you a good shot?
Well, I don't think I was. I think they must have made me a good shot because I had the handicap of being left-handed. The bolt action rifle, that's hard work.
But you became a reasonable shot.
Yeah, I think so.
And what other training? So you've got camouflage training, rifle training. What else would you do with the Army Cadet Force?
Well, very basic wireless training, but it was very basic.
What sort of thing? Because that's what you'd do eventually. How far did they get? Was it wireless or was it signal or was it just Morse?
Morse.
So it wasn't so much using the radios or the wirelesses.
No.
It was more learning Morse code.
Yeah.
And how did you take to Morse code at school? I mean, you know, some people find it easy, some people can't do it.
Well, it was relatively easy because my brother was mad on radio before he joined the army. And he learnt Morse code many, many years before he joined the service.
So had he partially taught you?
Yes.
So you had
because we had our own Morse keys in the house. He'd set all this up, you know, as kids.
So basically, you already knew. They were just
I knew a fair bit about it, yeah.
No, right. Sorry. Anything else you were learning? Any tactical training, you know, exercises in the field, you know, attacking, defending, that kind of thing? Running about?
Well, no, because we were a very limited cadet force. It was relatively small. We did, I remember once going to Aldermaston, which in those days was a American Air Force base.
And was this a summer camp, or was this?
No, it was just a day out, and they took us out on a Dakota, and we sat on the boxes in the back of the Dakota, and they took us all around the south of England and back again. And that was my first flight ever, I think.
And what was that like in
Yeah, I suppose it was basic, really. It was good fun. Anything was good fun for kids at that age, wasn't it?
Something new.
Yeah, something new.
So, right, so that was you'd done this training, you'd done that throughout your time till you were 16, and then you hadn't done anything since. Now, how did they receive, you know, you arrive at Catterick, and you're a civilian, you're going to be, you're a regular, or you're going to be.
Yeah.
But how did, you know, you go through the gate, how did they treat you?
Despite what they say about this, you know, hell on wheels when you walk through and you're doubled here, there and everywhere. We weren't. You were treated basically as sensible individuals, I think.
So there wasn't they didn't make an attempt to shout you
down
right
God,
from the
no,
start?
No,
So what did they do with you? They got you through the gate. What did you do?
Well, you eventually were kitted out.
Now, what were you kitted out with? Do you remember what the basic kit was?
Two pair of boots, socks, tunic, beret, two pair of trousers, couple of shirts, khaki, knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb and lather brush. You want to quote the 1157?
I know, yes. And you'd have a housewife, I presume.
That's right, yes, yes.
So you got your uniform. Did it fit? I mean, did they didn't measure you, I presume. They just guessed.
Well, yeah, they guessed, yeah. But there was a tailor on the camp, and he did a pretty good job on us, really.
Now, what was your accommodation like? What were you in? Were you in huts?
No, you were in spider accommodation, yeah, in huts.
Now, what were the huts like? Can you describe your barrack hut? You know,
Well, it was a basic wooden hut. It wasn't decrepit in any way. This was, I think, the first hut we were in until we passed out. And then we were moved into the old brick-built spider units in Men and Lions.
Well, tell us about the wood one first. Was it a Nissen? Well, it may not have been.
It wasn't a Nissen hut. It was I don't know what they call what the proper name of them was. But
a wooden hut.
There were wooden huts.
And how was it laid out? What was the layout like? Inside, you know, where were you all?
Well, I suppose there was about 25 of us in the hut. They were big enough to accommodate 25 beds with lockers
on all your kit
on either side.
And you had a
with a door either end, yeah. One door led out onto the parade square, and the other door led out to the wash basins and toilets.
Would you have an NCO in with you, a junior NCO, a corporal in a little thing at the end?
I can't recall us having a corporal living with us. But our drill instructor was an ex-Irish guardsman, and he was the most gentle man that you'd ever wish to meet. He was a super bloke.
In what way? Tell us a bit about
him. Well, he was, you know, they all had a job to do to train us men to be the better squad on the day. But this man, we were the best squad that passed out that day. But he didn't shout and swear and carry on at us.
He did it by getting you on his side.
That's right. And it's very unfortunate because he was an Irish guardsman before the war. There again, there was another man that was nearly finishing his time. And he was in the Guards Armoured Division. And after the war finished and the guards division went back as foot soldiers, all the guardsmen that had served in the Guards Armoured Division, all the senior NCOs were given the option of either going back as foot soldiers or transferring to cavalry regiments and becoming senior NCOs. And this is what this man did. Incidentally, our regimental sergeant major, when I eventually became an 8th King's Royal Irish Hussar, was this man's senior sergeant. Tom Leckie, who his name was, our RSM eventually, was an Irish guardsman who was in the Guards Armoured Division, served with the sergeant that was our troop sergeant.
So this, what were the other instructors like? So he was really nice. Was he a main one, the drill?
He taught us virtually everything. He was with us all the time, not only drill, but skillet arms.
Well, let's look. What we do is we look at a typical day, and then everything else sort of spins off that. So, how would your day start? You know, your recruit training, obviously. Yeah.
Your first thing, obviously, was breakfast, and then you went on the square and did.
What was the food like, Jen? We'd deal with all the food for the whole day together. What did you think of the food compared to, say, what you were used to at home or the rest of it?
Well, I don't think it was that bad. Bearing in mind, we were only 18-year-olds, and anything was good if you were hungry.
Was there enough of it?
Yeah, I'm sure there was.
So you didn't go hungry?
No. There was a naffy there. There was a church army hut, the Salvation Army, which you have vacated at 9:15 every night as the man came in.
Well, come on. So, as far as you were concerned, the food was reasonably well cooked. The quantity was okay, and the ingredients. So after breakfast, what then?
You went out then and did square bashing.
Now, how did you take to drill? You liked your drill instructor, but. Not, you know, you'd done some of it, obviously, before. How did you take to drill in the army?
Well, you go along with the crowd. And I think if you're enthusiastic, bearing in mind, my whole life had centred around being a serviceman. And that's what I wanted to do. And I said to many, many, many people, join the army. But bearing in mind, the first 2 or 3 years are going to be bloody rough.
So, you didn't mind drill?
I didn't mind drill.
Did you get to enjoy it? Because some people really enjoy it.
Well, yeah, it is. It was good.
Did you know why you had to do so much of it at the time? I mean,
you didn't. You seem to think that it's a waste of time. But on reflection, it's not a waste of time because they're training you to not to think and do it instinctively.
Now, what about one of the training sessions? You're in the morning, Tracy. You've had a nice drill session. A drill session. What else?
In the afternoon, you'd go out on the Yorkshire Moors and you'd do rifle training, Sten gun.
Well, tell us about some weapons training. Now, tell me about the rifle. How do you do with that? I mean, you've still got this problem being left-handed, I presume.
Well, yes.
There aren't any left-handed Lee Enfields.
No, there isn't.
Because that's what I thought. I mean, so you do have to just
put your hand over and do it. And it became natural, I suppose, at the end of the day.
And you did become a reasonable shot.
Yeah.
What do you think you need to be a good shot? Is it sort of eyesight, steadiness?
Well, you've got to be able to relax, haven't you? Because you can't tense up or your rifle's going to go all over the place.
You'll tremor, you mean, if you tense. So does that mean breathing's important?
Well, yes.
The timing. Anything else? Is eyesight important?
I don't think there is anything else important. So you've got to have a good eye.
So you do need a good eye, reasonable eyesight. Now, what about other weapons? So that's the right bayonet. Did you do any bayonet training?
Yeah.
What was that? Tell us about that.
Well, it's just to stick a bayonet on the end of the Lee Enfield and stuff it into a sack of straw, basically, isn't it?
They'd stop teaching people what they used to call bayonet fencing, you know, bringing the butt through, things like that.
Well, I'm talking about it now from the point of view that I joined a cavalry regiment, which was an armoured regiment. What the infantry did is different.
Fair enough, good point. Now, so bayonet, you mentioned Sten. What did you think of the Sten? Because you would use that. I mean,
that's right. Oh yeah, that was.
What training did you do on it, and what did you think?
Well, you stripped it and you fired it, and you were obviously told not to bang it down as you shoot your foot off.
They actually warned you that the spring would go.
Oh yeah, yeah. By that time, there was a lot of people that had been killed with it, weren't they?
And what about it as a weapon? I mean, how accurate do you think it was?
Well, I would give it a sort of a score of perhaps two or three, but you just fired it and hoped for the best, didn't you?
So it didn't, I mean, how...
The number of rounds you fired, you got hit something eventually.
So it was more a volume thing, yeah, than a aimed shot at a person.
That's right, yeah.
Now, what other weapons? A Bren gun?
Yes.
What do you think of that? That's a bit
different. Well, that's a bit more accurate, yeah, and you were relaxed with it. You led down and used it properly, didn't you? And you stripped it and you put it all back together again.
That's quite a job, stripping and putting a Bren gun. You actually did that. Did you get as far as the blindfold test and things like that, or did they not bother with you?
I can't really remember whether we got that far.
Now, what about grenades?
Well, yes, we had the throw up grenades.
And what was that like? Because some people don't like the grenade, or don't like being trained on it.
Well, no, that's quite true. No, it was all right, as far as I can remember.
No problems with people dropping them in the trench and things?
No.
How far could you throw them? Because you use a bowling action,
that's
don't you?
That's right, yeah. Well, there was a safe distance in which you threw them before the sergeant told you to get your head down. But
any other weapons, either mortars or rocket launchers of various, you know, anti-tank things?
No.
So that's pretty it for
this is basic training.
What about PT, physical training? What sorts of physical training they put you through?
Well, that was another morning's activity that did come into it. After possibly drill. You did drill every morning.
So what would the PT be? What did they have you doing?
Well, cross-country running.
How far? All depends.
All depends.
Would you go far, or was it just a mile?
Well, no, it stretched a bit farther than the... Well, you started off with a mile, I suppose. And it gradually stretched and stretched and stretched, didn't it? And then you'd go in the gym, you had wall bars, you had vaulting boxes, horses. I remember at Catterick in Men and Lions, one of the drill instructors was a very keen tug-of-war man. And the scaffolding weights that they had there was terrific. We used to get stuck into that occasionally.
Did it make you fitter? I don't know how fit you were, you see, but did the army...
I'm sure it did, yeah. Bearing in mind, see, today they talk about kids joining the army that are basically obese. But we never had the food to become obese, did we?
So you had a natural wiriness, just
that's right,
putting a bit of muscle on it.
Though. Yeah.